then that is how they'll be approved. But if they tell the truth, as Eric Shinseki did, general who said we would need, oh, at least $100 or $200 billion to fight the war in Iraq, they're fired. And Shinseki was wrong. True, Paul Wolfowitz said it would cost $1 or $2 billion, and in fact we could get it back through $50 to $100 billion spent on Iraqi oil revenues. And Shinseki said it would cost 100 times that. And of course he was wrong. It costs 300 times that in counting. So Shinseki, who was fired for telling the truth, now we find out that the truth is even worse than he suggested. So again, we have these examples again and again and again. We know, for example, that on the Medicare bill, there was an actuary who was asked a question by Congress. Now, when Congress asks you a question, you're required to tell them the truth. You take an oath to respond to congressional questions, to congressional investigations, to uphold the truth. If you lie to them, it's perjury. Well, what about withholding the truth? That's a closer example. Because we know, for example, that the Medicare actuary was ordered by his superior, do not tell the truth to Congress. If you tell the truth to Congress, you will be fired. Congress has no right to know the truth. We also know, of course, that's true with the secret spy agency set up by Donald Rumsfeld that just came out in the paper today. Again, against the law, they refused to tell the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, not just Democrats, they didn't tell Republicans either, the truth. And, of course, not telling the truth is definitely grounds for promotion in the administration. Hell, even George Tenet received the Medal of Freedom because he has said that let's just say he hasn't told whether or not he told George Bush the same thing he told Bob Woodward, which is that hours after 9/11, minutes, I should say, after 9/11, he knew exactly who had caused it. He knew, in fact, he figured out about the scheme to fly planes into buildings. So there's a lot of different facts here. I want to take it apart piece by piece. I want to examine each of the president's men and women and find out whether indeed truth or loyalty is more respected. To me, this became no more clear than in the Senate nomination hearings. Did you watch any of those? Because the Democrats were saying Condoleezza Rice lied. Condoleezza Rice lied. She lied here, she lied there, she lied there. She said that Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons. She said we need to fear a mushroom cloud over New York. She said that he had chemical, biological weapons. And how did the Republicans respond? Did they say, no, Condoleezza Rice told the truth? They didn't. Did you hear how they responded? They said, Democrats, get over this angry rhetoric and move on with the election. They said, Democrats, how dare you impugn the integrity of Dr. Rice? They didn't say Dr. Rice is telling the truth. They said, how dare you impugn her integrity? And above all, the comment I heard the most by Republicans in the Senate nomination battles was, hey, Condoleezza Rice was just doing what the president told her to do. She was just following the president's policy. She can't be blamed for lying when, in effect, the president told her to lie. She was just a loyal member of the administration, and she should be praised for that. And in fact, you Democrats recognize the need for the president to have loyal advisors. You should recognize that Condoleezza's loyalty to the president trumps any obligation of truth to the United States. And in that way, again, Condoleezza Rice is serving her boss like Rosemary Woods served as Nixon's secretary. She also was loyal to a fault. And she, as was said by her co-workers, quote, Rose would just lay down her life and die for him, unquote. She would do anything for Richard Nixon, including destroying evidence of his crime. And she has admitted, in fact, under close investigation when she was caught, that she indeed erased 18 and a half minutes of a secret Watergate conversation where Nixon is discussing the Watergate break-in. She says it was done accidentally. And in fact, there's a wonderful picture in her obituary of the stretch she would have had to have done, touching about three things at once, to accidentally erase that. But so loyalty to the president, that's nothing new. Willing to commit crimes for the president, that's nothing new. Lying to the American people to protect the president is nothing new. But my question is, do you think that Republicans, the people who voted for George Bush, do you think they support that? I mean, and I ask you out there, call in, let me know what you think. Whether you agree with me, disagree, 877-57-SCOOP. Do you believe that people who support the president, people who support the Republican Party, would prefer that the nominees lie to the American people than be disloyal to the President of the United States. I mean, they have a point when they're talking about Condoleezza Rice. I admit they have a point. I don't know that Dr. Rice thought up these lies. I actually think she probably didn't. And she was just saying what the President said. Let's look, for example, that in May 2003, Bush was taking questions from reporters about weapons of mass destruction, and he was asked, and he said, quote, "We found the weapons of mass destruction. We found biological laboratories." Quote, unquote, May 2003. Now, this is a direct quote, folks. I'm not making this up. Quote, "We found the weapons of mass destruction. We found biological laboratories," unquote. That was untrue. And not only was it untrue, but Bush had to have known it was untrue, because we have just had inspectors, in fact, quietly walk off their jobs after the election, admitting they couldn't find anything. So what else? What else did Bush say? Well, he said in October 2002, quote, "And surveillance photos reveal that the regime is rebuilding facilities that it had used to produce chemical and biological weapons," unquote. In the same interview, quote, "We've discovered through intelligence that Iraq has a growing fleet of manned and unmanned aerial vehicles that could be used to disperse chemical weapons across broad areas," unquote. Well, that wasn't true. That wasn't true at all. Colin Powell got that before the United Nations. And as Bush said, this is Bush quoting what Colin Powell said. Again, direct quote from Bush. "You remember when Colin Powell stood up in front of the world and he said Iraq has got laboratories, mobile labs to build biological weapons, and we'll find more weapons as time goes on. But for those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them," unquote. Well, now Bush said all these things, and they were all untrue. Indeed, Colin Powell, to his credit, as Secretary of State, recognized that his devotion to truth was more important than his devotion to the President. So even though he didn't go far enough, as far as I'm concerned, and make a public statement, he did say some things to Bob Woodward, and he did tell the President, and the President hasn't denied it, that he was very, very upset when he was basically put out to lie before the United Nations, put out to spin things that later he found out were untrue. Sometimes a tractor-trailer truck is just a tractor-trailer truck. So defenders of Condoleezza Rice have a point. She's not lying to the American people. She's repeating what the President said. And if what the President says are lies, your problem is with the President, not with Condoleezza Rice. Well, that's a point. That's a point. She is regularly lying for the President. And our problem is with the President. Let's look at just the example of trained Iraqi forces. Okay, Condoleezza Rice says, as the President says, that there are over 120,000. But the people there in Iraq, the generals, the military, the intelligence, the Iraqis themselves, the Iraqi government says it's about 4,000. 120,000 or 4,000? Well, that's close, right? I mean, you wouldn't notice a difference if someone gave you $4,000 or $120,000, would you? That's all within the margin of error. I don't think so. But again, she's just lying the way Bush lies. And so you can't complain, can you? Can you complain? I mean, the Senate has to advise and consent. Should they put someone who believes in truth over devotion to the President, or is devotion to the President enough? Is it enough to have everyone, just like Rosemary Woods, give their loyalty to the President above any question of truth? Again, just look at the projections for costs in Iraq. Wolfowitz said we'd make money, $50 to $100 billion in Iraqi oil revenue. It would maybe cost a billion or two, right? And when the truth was told, it would cost $100 to $200 billion. Those people were fired, and of course they were wrong too. It's costing $300 billion. Same is true with lives. They never predicted the amount of lives lost or injured, and of course we all know that it's over 1,400 lives and more than 10,000 injured. As we go on, though, I want to talk about other people, other loyalists in the Bush administration, and I want to conclude with a long discussion of Alberto Gonzalez and his views on torture, because I don't think the American people are hearing the details. And, you know, so much of the time the devil is in the details. Alberto Gonzalez can raise his right hand and say, oh, we don't believe in torture, and not admit that, in fact, he doesn't believe in torture as he's defined it. And, of course, he defines torture as organ failure. Yes, permanent organ failure. I mean, if you temporarily destroy someone's kidneys, but they get it back a month later, that's not torture. I'm going to get into the specifics of that later on in the hour. I definitely want to go there. Before I get there, though, I want to talk about the Homeland Security. I want to talk about the Homeland Security nominees. First, of course, we have George Bush, and he nominates Bernard Kerik. Interestingly, Bernard Kerik was duly vetted by none other than Alberto Gonzalez. Interesting. Alberto Gonzalez found nothing wrong with Bernard Kerik, thought he was just fine, recommended him for nomination to the president. If anything, I think that suggests that Mr. Gonzalez is not the most competent person, totally apart from his views on torture. But what was very interesting to me is how the whole thing was played. Let's look at what we know about Bernard Kerik. We know that he had mafia ties. He had ties to known mobsters. What else do we know? We know that he used a facility for 9/11 victims. He used that facility to shack up with his girlfriend. Okay? And we also know that he apparently didn't pay taxes on a nanny. Which story got all the press? Which do you think is the most egregious? Having mafia ties, misusing public resources, or not paying taxes on a nanny? If you really think the nanny is the most serious, hey, you know, call in and let me know. I think that's hard to say. But I do think it's interesting that the media just blindly followed what the Bush administration said. Oh, it's all about the nanny. It's all about the nanny, not the mafia ties, not the misuse of official resources. We misuse official resources all the time. After all, Tom Ridge was just in Hawaii, you know, going out. They were going surfboarding, all on Homeland Security money, wearing Lays. No one complained about that. No one complained about that boondoggle. Boondoggles happen all the time. Going and taking a facility set aside for 9/11 victims and having sex with your mistress there, well, that's no bigger a deal than Bill Clinton having sex with an intern in the White House. And we impeached Clinton for that, so surely we're not even going to mention when Bernard Kerik does it. No, we're going to talk about his nanny, because that's the way to get rid of it. And sometimes I wonder if when our president and all his loyal men and women do really egregious things and really mundane things, if it isn't the mundane things that are focused on in the media, one, because the Bush administration wants it, and the other, because, hey, that's all the American public seems to understand. I mean, you could go back to Ronald Reagan and Iran-Contra, where he took money that was designated to basically trade arms for hostages, which was also against the law, and then he gave it to the Contras, which was against the law. But see, only the president can do that. So Americans didn't really understand it, I guess. But when Bill Clinton has sex with an intern in the White House, aha, that's conduct Americans can understand. Bernard Kerik having mafia ties? Not many of us have mafia ties. That's kind of hard to understand. Not many of us have access to a federal center for 9/11 victims. But some of us, yes, don't pay our taxes on our nannies. So we understand that. We understand the minor crime. We don't understand the major crime. And I think it's going to be interesting when we see with Alberto Gonzalez, because they're finally catching him in a minor crime. The name of the crime? Perjury. Alberto Gonzalez has been caught lying when he talked about how he got George Bush, then governor in 1996, out of jury duty. In fact, it was to hide a conviction for drunk driving that George Bush had. I'm going to get to all of that after the commercial break, but it'll be interesting to see if the small things that people understand, well, that can bring people down more than the big things, even though the big things are much greater crimes. I want to talk about Michael Chertoff when we come back, and I also want to take your questions. All you have to do is dial in toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Yeah. Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas, to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right-wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico, 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And if you want to join in, all you have to do is dial toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. Loyalty to the White House is definitely rewarded in this administration. Those who disagree with the administration that warn of massive deficits, people like Paul O'Neill, are kicked out. People who warn that if we invade Iraq, if we break it, we've bought it, like Colin Powell. He's gone. Christine Todd Whitman, who suggested that maybe we don't turn over our environment to polluters, well, she's out of there. We are bringing in the loyalists, people who understand that loyalty to the president is more important than truth. One thing I found recently was very interesting was looking back into the election of 2000. Do you remember the riot by local protesters? They called it the Brooks Brothers riot because they were all dressed up in coat and tie in Miami. The people who forced the Miami election authorities by banging on the windows and intimidating people, and actually at one point grabbing someone and roughing them up, they forced the Miami elections officials to stop counting the ballots. Counting ballots that the protesters and Gore and Bush all believed were favoring Al Gore. Well, it's interesting to look where they are now because, of course, none of those people were local, none of them that I'm aware of. In fact, every single one who has been identified was, in fact, a House employee, kind of like me, only working for the Republicans. And they were sent down there on paid vacations to go down and protest. So where are they now? Well, we have Matt Schlapp, who is a former House aide and a Bush campaign aide, is now the White House political director. We have Gary Malfras. He was at the time, he was staff director for the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Criminal Justice, again, a congressional staff position like I had. He's now deputy director of the White House Domestic Policy Council. Rory Cooper was at the National Republican Congressional Committee. Then he was on the Homeland Security Council. Last week, he was working on the Presidential Inaugural Committee. Tom Pyle, who worked for Tom DeLay, is now lobbying for Koch Industries. Roger Morris, another House aide, went on to law and lobbying, as did Dwayne Gibson and a few others. The point is that if you go out there and commit a riot in the service of this administration, you are going to be rewarded. This is an administration that rewards you for your loyalty. And one of the stories that I think has gotten very little press about rewarding for loyalty, and I'm going to get to Alberto Gonzalez in just a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff is the person that's going to be nominated, almost certainly, as Homeland Security Advisor. When Bernard Kerik's nomination failed, it looks like Michael Chertoff's will take its place. Well, Michael Chertoff used to work in the Justice Department, and he actually worked on a case that I'm quite familiar with because it comes out of Boston, Massachusetts, and my member of Congress who I worked for was from that area of Massachusetts, and has to do with an FBI undercover agent by the name of Whitey Bulger. Again, I know the details of this case well. I worked on it. Now, Whitey Bulger was an FBI informant, and the FBI very much wanted to protect their informant. So when Whitey Bulger killed a man, not only did the FBI not turn Bulger in as a murderer, but they allowed an innocent man to serve 30 years in prison, knowing all along the guy was innocent. Not a good sign by the FBI, not punishing the murderer and allowing an innocent man go to jail. When Congress tried to get information on this, Michael Chertoff stood in their way. He said the president had executive privilege and that Congress had no right to investigate. If the FBI wanted to murder people and let innocent people go to jail, it was none of America's business. He made that very clear. And who, by the way, has said this? Who has exposed this? Is it Michael Moore or some other liberal that we really can't believe? Interestingly, it's Robert Novak. No more right-wing conservative than Robert Novak. Robert Novak has explained that even though supporters say Chertoff was taking orders from Ashcroft, congressional staffers told him Chertoff was calling the shots. It was his belief the executive branch never, ever, ever has to give any documents to the legislative branch. Now, of course, Chertoff was overruled after a lot of public pressure by the Democrats and others. But what's interesting, of course, is there has been no financial compensation to the families of the victims of the FBI killing. And again, Michael Chertoff rewarded for taking an extreme position on the law that the government can just murder people and throw innocent people in jail, and no one needs to know about it. And he's being rewarded for his loyalty. Now, take a break and take your calls. All you have to do is dial toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
And it is your biggest California fan.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
I'm good.
I suffered through a press conference today, but I was very pleasantly surprised because the questions that came through made me think, my God, we have a free press once again right here in the United States. They were asking some good, pointed, tough questions.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dave, I've already decided, I didn't have time to do it for today's show, but I've already decided I'm going to take that press interview and play long snippets of it along with the questions I would ask the president, do my own interview, so I guarantee you that's coming up on a future Inside Scoop.
Oh, great. Did you hear it yourself?
I heard only parts of it. I had to prepare for today's show. That's part of the problem, so I don't want to comment too much on it, but go ahead, make your comment.
Well, one of the questions was, do you think it's a good use of taxpayers' money to be paying right-wing radio talk show hosts?
Right.
To which the president responded, yes, that was a very bad mistake on the part of Armstrong Williams.
As if it was just Armstrong Williams. You know, it's interesting. I tell you, in today's Washington Post, and I'm glad you brought this up, we find out, and by the way, it was on page C1 of the style section. So you might miss it if you're not real careful. It's kind of down in the far right corner. But Maggie Gallagher is another right-wing pundit, and she's one who really talks about the marriage initiative, how the government can protect marriage. But what she didn't say is that she's gotten $20,000 twice, so a total of $40,000, from the Bush administration to promote this agenda. So it's not just her. It's not just Armstrong Williams. It's not just Karen Ryan at Medicare. It's not just the people in the Social Security Administration who've been told to lie, to not talk about, for example, the Congressional Budget Office, which says that with the individual private accounts, you're likely to earn less than under the current system. They've been told to lie to push the Republican agenda in Social Security. We've got people in the military given wallet-sized plastic cards, how to talk to the military. We have the Office of National Drug Control Policy that is giving out details that are not scientifically proven on marijuana, pretending they're objective. And, hey, I got one more for you. And that is that Sean Hannity, you'll like this one. Sean Hannity invited Jesse Lee Peterson, a talk show host, conservative black activist, to come on his show to bash Jesse Jackson. In fact, he called it the National Day of Repudiation of Jesse Jackson. And in there, he talked about how Peterson helped all these homeless people building homes, and that Jesse Jackson isn't that true? In fact, he even suggested Jesse Jackson donate to Peterson's group. But what he didn't say is that Hannity himself serves on the board of Peterson's organization and, in fact, is paid by that group. So we have right-wing talk show hosts. We have people in the military. We have people in the administration. We have time after time, example after example. And according to the Bush administration, it's just Armstrong Williams.
Well, and he's blaming him for receiving it, not him for paying it. But, you know, they...
Why doesn't he give it back? I could use that $240,000. That would, you know, that would really help.
Turn you into a right winger overnight.
Apparently so. Hey, $250,000? I don't know.
I got to believe if they're paying a few, they're paying them all. It's our taxpayer money, and they don't seem to care what they do with that.
Yeah, I don't know that they're paying them all, but they're sure paying a large number. And what's interesting, of course, is that Alawi in Iraq is doing exactly the same thing. He's learned from President Bush. He also pays reporters for favorable information. And you have to wonder what kind of free press we have. We have Sinclair buying up the television stations, telling them what to say. We have the Fox Propaganda Channel telling people to spout a right-wing agenda. We have Rupert Murdoch, who I think is too rich to be paid off, but definitely supports a right-wing agenda, paying people off. Clear Channel radio stations. I mean, you have all of this payoff of the media. And I remember when the Soviet Union did it, and they called it Pravda, and they said it wasn't truth. I would think it would be a bigger comment. I know you heard my show yesterday, Dave. We had the conservative there, Jim Parmley, and I kept saying to him, do you support government-funded propaganda? And he said, well, you know, you don't really need to label it. The public doesn't really need to know. Maybe the stations might want to put a disclaimer on it. But I don't think most Americans, even most Republicans, support this government-funded propaganda, Dave.
No, I don't think so either, Mark. I listen to your program every day, and usually you get me interested enough to call in with something.
Well, you're my most regular caller, Dave.
Do watch that press conference today, and you will listen to the reporters, and my God, you'll think, this is in America? They're asking these kind of questions?
I will listen to it, and I will report it. That's part of my job. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Dave.
Right,
I appreciate it. I want to get to Alberto Gonzalez, but first, we're going to take another commercial break, and I'm also going to take more of your calls at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and then we're going to discuss in detail Alberto Gonzalez. Talk about torture, and not just, oh, well, what's torture? We're all against torture. But let's define it. Let's talk exactly what he did with torture, with getting George Bush off of jury duty by lying to a judge and to the Senate. There's a lot to tell here on the Inside Scoop today. You're welcome to call in as you wish. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back where I'm going to play some of the Senate confirmation hearings of Alberto Gonzalez right after these messages.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to four real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi, and I get turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? Ha, ha, ha. She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The topic today is all the president's men and women, and is it true that the president seems to value loyalty over truth? I want to devote really the second half of this hour to Alberto Gonzalez, but I also want to get to your calls. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. Feel free to come in, comment, agree, disagree, tell me your impressions of the hearings. That's what this show is about, too. 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can contribute to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine.
This is Ed from New York, Mark.
Hi, Ed. And,
you know, I don't remember the exact way the proverb goes or the phrase goes, but those who forget about history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think back that there have been three times that the American presidency has, in the last century, went ahead of the people and pushed loyalty too far. The first was Roosevelt packing the court. The second was Senator Joseph McCarthy, and in my opinion, the third would be Richard Nixon in Watergate. If you look at those, in each of those three situations, there is one thing that remains the same. That is, the hubris of the president was charged by the loyalty of the people that followed him. In other words, when Nixon went down, Nixon also took down all the people in the White House who were very close to him because they believed that loyalty was more important than anything else until John Dean opened up the door. And, of course, Richard Nixon had to resign. I think what we have here in the current situation is the same type of hubris, the same type of loyalty. When you talk about Alberto Gonzalez or Condi Rice or any of these people, those that disagree with the president are given short shrift and are fired. And like Christy Whitman, who is forced to resign, and Secretary of Treasury, Mr. Snow. So I think we're getting ready for an explosion in Washington. And I can't tell you whether it'll be, you know, next month or next year, but I'm convinced that something's going to explode.
Well, Ed, thank you for your call. I wish I could be, I guess, that optimistic. I don't know that explosion is something I want to wish for, but definitely something to encourage this administration to listen to the American people. It is interesting, of course, this president was reelected in the smallest percentage margin ever by any reelected president in American history. And yet if we compare him with Richard Nixon, who was elected by the largest margin, either him in 72 or Reagan in 84, I'm not quite sure which. I know that Reagan only lost Minnesota and D.C., and Nixon only lost Massachusetts and D.C. They each only won 49 states. But it's very interesting that right after that reelection by Richard Nixon in a landslide, and that was a landslide unlike this one, that hubris that Ed spoke of is exactly, apparently, what brought Nixon down. The difference is there were honest people in the Nixon administration, people like John Dean, who were willing to tell the truth. I have to think some of those exist in the Bush administration, and many of them are leaking, in fact. I don't know. This administration is trying to get rid of people who tell the truth. Even if it's true, they don't want truth. What they want is loyalty. And I think nowhere have we seen that more than in the nominee for Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez. You know, when the Senate Judiciary Committee asked Alberto Gonzalez about his role in writing the memo that defines what constitutes torture, this is what Gonzalez, at the hearing, he said, "I'm not sure I'll have to get back to you." And here's what he wrote down, because I think sometimes the handwritten response doesn't get the same press, you know, that the spoken response does, because they can do the news clips. And so, hey, I have to report it to you. But here's what he said, quote, "I have no such notes, and I have no present knowledge of any such notes, memoranda, emails, or other documents, and I have not conducted a search." Because, quote unquote, because Gonzalez said, even if he were to locate such documents, he refuses to release them, claiming executive privilege and pre-decisional deliberations. So he doesn't have any, but he didn't look, and if he found some, he wouldn't tell you anyway. Is this hubris? Is this putting loyalty over truth? In his written answers to Senator Kennedy, he said, quote, "I am not at liberty to disclose," unquote, at least 10 times. He said, "I do not recall," 6 times. Or, "I have no recollection," 6 times. "I did not conduct a search," 7 times. "And I'm not at liberty," 10 times. "And I have no present knowledge," 7 times. Now, let's see. How do we add that up? 40 times? Blocking? And yet, when the Democrats in the Senate want to delay a committee vote on Gonzalez, they're accused of holding up the process. Well, I have news for the Republicans. The Constitution allows the Senate to advise and consent on presidential cabinet positions. Sure, the president should have someone in there that he trusts, but he also should have someone who is responsive to Congress. In fact, that is part of the obligation of being a cabinet officer, to report to Congress. So all these people that say, "I don't have to tell Congress," in effect what they're saying is, "I don't have to tell the American people." I mean, even Bruce Fein, a Reagan administration justice official, reported in the Washington Post, said, quote, "A conservative should want greater congressional scrutiny. It limits government and checks folly," unquote. But what's interesting about conservatives, they don't see this contradiction. They want limited government except when they have one-party control. And when one party controls everything, when their guys, the Bush administration, are running wild, they don't want any checks and balances. Checks and balances they think are un-American, I guess, because they won't tell Congress what's going on. I don't know. I don't recall. I've put together just a little bit of some of what Gonzalez had to say in his testimony. Just put a little tracks together. Let's listen.
way of reaching a conclusion on that. I don't remember the facts of this particular case. For asking me to answer a hypothetical, I'm not in a position to answer that question. Right? I have no views. That is a hypothetical question. I don't have a response to this unless there was a question.
That just gives you an idea of some of the many things that he said. Now, I want to play for you some of the questions that were asked of him at that hearing, because I think it gives a good idea of the frustration of the Senate Democrats in dealing with not just Alberto Gonzalez, but really anyone in the Bush administration trying to get a straight answer, trying to find out his position on things. And, well, let's hear, for example, this is Patrick Leahy, who's asking Judge Gonzalez some questions.
Like Obrigarate, in the sense that the administration knew about this torture. They had been asked questions by me, by Republican senators and others that they refused to answer about the torture before it became public. Nobody said, oh my gosh, this is horrible, we're all against torture, anything else. When the picture started appearing on the front page of the newspapers or on television, then everybody scrambles around and take memos and policies that have been in place for some time, and they start changing it. We've talked about the memo on torture that was changed at the beginning of a three-day weekend, just for New Year's, coincidentally, just before you were coming here to testify. The Carrick thing, I mentioned that because apparently everybody in New York knew all these things. He'd gone through all kinds of scrutiny, initial scrutiny by you. According to press from your office, you gave him a very strenuous talking to, and you know there are certain questions that are asked to elicit this. It was only when Newsweek said, oh, you know, we're going to print some stuff on this, that suddenly we find a convenient nanny. And maybe there was such a nanny. I don't know. But you see what I'm getting at. I want to be more proactive, not just because the press finds something out, and what is a very, very secretive administration, but that people like yourself and others will say, wait a minute, don't go there. We have a problem. I'll tell you, for example, in November 2003, we learned that for more than a year, a Republican staff member named Manny Miranda had stolen computer files from Democratic staffers on the Judiciary Committee, especially on matters relating to judicial nominations. Did you know about that file theft before it was publicly uncovered in November 2003?
No, sir, I did not.
And do you know of anybody at the White House who received copies of those stolen memos?
No, sir, I do not.
Now, that's quite interesting. I happen to know about those stolen memos because I was working on the Hill at the time. I didn't know they were stolen, but I did know the Republicans had access to it. I received several emails before it became public, trumpeting all the things the Democrats were doing, their strategies on judicial nominees, and complaining about the Democratic strategies. And they were put forward quite proudly by Republicans all across the Hill and, frankly, outside the Hill. I know a lot of you may have gotten those emails, or at least a lot of Republicans got those emails, talking about the Democrats' judicial strategy long before it became public that, in fact, that was stolen off the Democrats' computer. So Gonzalez didn't know about it. The White House didn't know about it. How did Mark Levin know about it when the White House and Gonzalez didn't know about it? I think Leahy made some very strong points. And those of you that attack the Democrats for not being strong enough, just remember, a lot of what they say just doesn't get publicized. Leahy, I think, very accurately points out, Senator Leahy, how the administration had this policy on torture for years, at least a year before Abu Ghraib, and did nothing about it until it became public. That's how they do things in this administration. They don't complain until it becomes public. I mentioned some of this yesterday. The Taguba memo that described the details of the Abu Ghraib torture. Don Rumsfeld had that for 6 months. Did nothing until the picture started coming out. And they didn't change the policy on torture until New Year's. What New Year's? 02, 03, 04? New Year's 05. They changed it a month ago. And they changed it because, well, Alberto Gonzalez was about to get confirmed for the Senate. Nice to know that check and balance works a little bit. But, of course, once he's confirmed, there will be no more check and balance. I thought Patrick Leahy said it very strongly and very clearly. And I want to move a little bit away from torture. I'll get back to it, don't worry, particularly after the break, because I want to explain to you how these torture memoranda worked. But I want to play another exchange, one that's gotten virtually no press that I've seen, with Dick Durbin, totally apart from torture, because I think it shows the incredible arrogance of the man who's about to be our next Attorney General.
It is clear to me, having served in this committee and by human...
Let me just make clear. The first person talking, this is Senator Dick Durbin.
It is clear to me, having served in this committee and by human experience, that if you are black or brown in America, you are more likely to be detained, arrested, convicted, prosecuted, and convicted, and serve time for many crimes in this country. I think that is a sad but reality. That's the reality of America today. I'd like to ask you your observation of that. I can give you statistics. I won't bore you or fill the record with them about the disproportionate number of black and brown people who are in prison today and on death row. I would like to hear your sentiments as our aspiring Attorney General on this obvious injustice in America.
Senator, I have vague knowledge about the statistics that you refer to. I believe that if we are going to have the death penalty, and this is consistent with the President's beliefs, that it should be administered fairly and that only the guilty are punished. If, in fact, the case is that only minorities, Hispanics and African Americans, are receiving the death penalty, it would be hard for me to conclude that that is a fair system. And if that were indeed the case, I think that we should reexamine the application of the death penalty. I personally do believe in the death penalty. I do believe that it deters crime and saves lives. But I fundamentally believe that it's got to be administered fairly.
I'm afraid I believe the challenge goes beyond death penalty issues. Drug crimes are another illustration where disproportionately black and brown people are imprisoned over drug crimes, where many, if not most, of the customers are white and don't face the same penalties. So I hope that as you set that standard, it would apply to non-death penalty situations, which also raise these serious issues of justice.
I will commit to you that I will look at that, Senator.
He commits that he will look at it. He's going to look at it. He's going to commit to looking at it. Judge Gonzalez is unaware of these statistics. You know, when I went to law school, we studied a very famous case, Furman v. Georgia, that was based entirely on these statistics showing that, in fact, if you're black and brown or brown in America, or even more, if you're poor in America, you are not given the same justice as if you're rich. Every American knows that, Judge Gonzalez. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that if you're rich, you can beat the rap often, but if you're poor, you're given the worst form of defense counsel. In Texas, where Judge Gonzalez, Attorney General, well, I don't want to call him Attorney General yet, President's counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, served as counsel to Governor George W. Bush. And during that time, he recommended for execution at least two examples, one where the guy's attorney fell asleep, and another example where the person was proven to be mentally retarded. Now, Gonzalez wants the death penalty administered fairly. He wants it administered fairly when he himself is unaware of the statistics that show that rich people get it less than poor people, that black people, if you're brown or black in America, as Senator Durbin put it, you're unlikely to get a fair shake on the death penalty. He wants it to be administered more fairly. He didn't administer it fairly himself. In his memo to Governor George W. Bush in Texas, he didn't even tell the governor, oh, by the way, the man's lawyer fell asleep during trial. There's another case where, in fact, the government had withheld witnesses that would talk to the accused innocents. And again, he didn't happen to tell George W. Bush that. It was in the pardon application. George W. Bush wasn't allowed to know. So Alberto Gonzalez is very good at hiding from his boss information that, if it came out, would be politically touchy. Interesting, he shares this same trait with George Tenet. George Tenet has said he knew about the 20th hijacker, Zakarias Moussaoui. He had figured there might be a plot to blow planes into buildings. He did meet with President Bush every day. Did he tell President Bush there's an Al-Qaeda plot to run planes into buildings? We don't know. George Tenet won't answer that question. But if he's anything like Alberto Gonzalez, then maybe he keeps from the president information that, if found out later, would harm the president politically. Of course, did you notice also how Alberto Gonzalez immediately said death penalty cases? It's not just death penalty cases. Senator Durbin's absolutely right. It's drugs. We know that most people in America using drugs are white. And we know that most people in prison for using drugs, disproportionately represented, are black or brown. We know that. We know that. And yet Gonzalez, who the Republicans want to put there because he's Latino, the Republicans who say they don't believe in affirmative action, want to put there because he's Latino, apparently this guy has no idea that Latinos are disproportionately represented in jail, that they don't use drugs more, they're just thrown in prison more. He'd never heard of it. Again, this is totally apart from torture, but it gives you an example of the kind of reasoning, the kind of thought process that goes on in the man that George Bush wants to be our attorney general. Now, I promised to get into the torture memo, to give you the details about it. And I think that's very important because Alberto Gonzalez has done a lot of things that really are extraordinary. Most famously, he said the Geneva Conventions don't apply to Al-Qaeda. And by the way, since they don't apply to Al-Qaeda, they don't apply to Guantanamo Bay. And since they don't apply to Guantanamo Bay, they don't apply to Iraq. And since they don't apply to Iraq, they don't apply anywhere in our, quote, war on terror, unquote. I know our war on terror does not include Iraq, but that's not what Bush says. In other words, they don't apply, period. I guess unless we fight Denmark, then maybe they'd apply. I don't know. But they don't apply. Well, you know, Gonzalez, what is the purpose of the Geneva Conventions? Why do we have them? Maybe we have them because we're a fair and humane nation. That's one argument. It's a decent one. Maybe because the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, which would seem to apply to everyone because the Eighth Amendment doesn't distinguish among citizens or non-citizens, Al-Qaeda members or non-Al-Qaeda members. All right, that's possible. Or maybe because it actually helps our American soldiers. See, what George Bush and Alberto Gonzalez and Condoleezza Rice haven't figured out is that the way to win a war today is not to advance troops across a checkerboard. Frankly, we should have learned it from Vietnam. We should have learned it from the Soviets in Afghanistan. We should definitely learn it in Iraq. Yes, we can take rivers and take bridges, but that's old-fashioned warfare. The only way to win the war in Iraq, a war that I never would have gone into in the first place, is to win the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people. Can anyone deny, in fact, that the reason why the insurgency is so strong is because we have not won their hearts and minds? In fact, because of what we did in Abu Ghraib, I think we have a lot more insurgents. The torture not only doesn't help give us information, it actually harms us because it makes more people angry at the United States and gives them more of a justification to torture our people too. So let's look at the logic, if you will, in what's now called the Bybee memo. Bybee drafted it. Gonzalez approved it. Let's look at how they use the law. And as a lawyer, these things interest me. I hope they will too. Severe pain is considered torture, but it's not defined in the federal statute that implements the United Nations Convention Against Torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment. So Gonzalez's group was asked to define it, define severe pain. They don't get into the other cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment of punishment. So what does he do? He goes to a Medicare statute, talking about reimbursement for Medicare, and they look at the question of emergency medical condition, not severe pain. They say in this other statute, which has nothing to do with torture, it has to do with, you know, compensating an injury. It says an emergency medical condition would be a pain accompanying severe physical injury such as organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death. Okay, that's what it says. It says that an emergency medical condition is manifested by acute symptoms of sufficient severity, including, but not limited to, severe pain, such that a prudent layperson who possesses an average knowledge of health and medicine could reasonably expect the absence of immediate medical attention to result in placing the health of the individual in serious jeopardy, serious impairment to bodily functions, or serious dysfunction of any bodily organ or part. All right. That's boring and it's long, but it gives you exactly what's in our code. That's how you get defined an emergency medical condition for purposes of Medicare and other medical benefits. All right. What does that have to do with torture? I don't know. But apparently Gonzalez felt it was enough. That if emergency... Basically, he said that torture is anything that requires an emergency medical condition. In other words, your life must be in serious jeopardy. There must be serious impairment to bodily functions. There must be organ failure. Not temporary organ failure, but permanent organ failure. Now, if I were the law professor, I would give an F to such logic. To take a question on torture and not to look at international law, not to look at the United Nations Convention on Torture, not to look at torture and international law in the past, but to look to a Medicare statute, to look to the question of emergency medical condition, which has nothing to do with torture, does it? So that's now why we were allowed to torture prisoners as much as we wanted, as long as we didn't cause severe organ failure. It's not just that. Alberto Gonzalez is the architect of the great idea of enemy combatants, that we can take anyone, including an American citizen, hold them in jail for life without trial in clear violation of the Bill of Rights just because we say so. Now, the Supreme Court, which is an ally of the administration, which has 7 Republicans and 2 Democrats, said you can't do that. You got to follow the Constitution. So now we have trials in Guantanamo Bay only in response to the Supreme Court, and even those have very low standards for admissible evidence. They can withhold evidence from defendants. They don't have to tell them what they're accused of, a clear violation of the Bill of Rights. And the judges don't have any legal experience. That's useful because you don't want them interpreting the law. Let me ask you this. Even if you believe that somehow the Bill of Rights doesn't apply, the Constitution doesn't apply, and the administration doesn't uphold it, shouldn't the White House care that the guy he wants to make, Bush wants to make, Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States, has done things that have been repeatedly declared by the United States Supreme Court to be unconstitutional? Does it matter that he is a symbol of torture throughout the world? That people are citing him as why they are going to attacking our troops? I mean, Democrats are asked to support our troops. Can't we support our troops better than by putting as Attorney General the guy whose name is synonymous with torture? We are building a prison today precisely for detainees that will never go to trial. You know, it's really amazing, someone who would use this kind of perverse legal reasoning, but I can't say I'm surprised. This is a president who came into power in 2000 by perverse legal reasoning. And so people are pretending. People are pretending that Guantanamo Bay, that Abu Ghraib, these are anomalies. But we know it's systematic. We know that Don Rumsfeld was hiding, in fact, detainees from the Red Cross, that these incidents started a year before, that they've been carried out by many branches, not just the Army. And we know that although Grainer was put in jail, no one higher than him, they even asked the question. And that's because they had a legal rationale. Alberto Gonzalez gave them a legal rationale for torture. And it's not just that one memo either, the Bybee memo. There's another memo in August 2002 that authorized 20 specific interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, which is where you pretend to drown somebody. It's the same thing that was used in Argentina and Uruguay. Have you noticed that when Abu Ghraib was known in Iraq, that that's when the insurgency began even more? People need to realize that attorney generals like Alberto Gonzalez harm our war effort, harm our troops. And all he can do is come and say things, you know, like this.
I will commit to you that I will look at that, Senator. Senator, I will commit that would be something that I would certainly look at.
He's going to look at it. Well, my friends, Alberto Gonzalez, the time to look for